I said, hey man, you got a problem? Like, is there something going on? Like, I don't understand. He's like, oh no. Our power steering pump was out. Our fuel pump kept shutting off. We had to keep pulling over. Had no. So I was like, all right. So that was the closest I ever been to whipping someone's ass out of the desert.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to Kevin Harvick's Happy Hour, presented by NASCAR on Fox. I'm Kevin Harvick, and today we are going to interview one of my great friends, first client at Kevin Harvick Management, and always an entertaining interview, Donald Cowboy Cerrone, 2023 UFC Hall of Fame inductee, and one heck of a showman through the years, and now calls himself a race car driver. So this should be a good interview. So let's welcome in Donald Cowboy Cerrone. All right, today on Kevin Harvick's Happy Hour, presented by NASCAR and Fox, we've got 2023 UFC Hall of Fame inductee Donald Cerrone with us today. And as usual, this guy's got a project going on at home, outside shooting guns, building something in the sauna, in his favorite plunge tank, whatever it may be. So what are we building today, Donald?
We're building a new tack room for the horses.
New tack room for horses. So that doesn't surprise me, but I'm just going to get right to it. What in the hell are you doing going from UFC fighter to race car driver? How did this start? I know you've always been around everything that we do from a racing standpoint, but now you are full bore into the racing thing. You just got done with the Mint 400 and flipping buggies. What has happened out there?
I don't know. I just got super involved into the racing and fell in love with it. You have the bug, you know exactly what it's all about. So, I don't know if it was at the end of your career was still as fun as it was. Like, the end of my fighting was not as fun as it was when I first started. So I imagine that's kind of where you knew it was time to hang it up. But for me, I'm like the beginning when you started, you know, I fell in love with racing and I just want to do as much as I can.
So you're doing Nitro Circus right now. There's your dog.
Nitro Cross.
Nitro Cross. That's right. I forgot. There's Nitro Cross and Nitro Circus. Nitro Cross. And so what's the long-term goal? Is it to run the Baja 1000? What's the end game here?
There is no end game. It's just to race as much as I can. So we raced the Baja 1000 last year. We took fifth place. I guess the end goal would be to run the Baja in the truck, because that would just need, I need KHI to loan me about 150K. Can you guys manage that or no? It'd be more of a gift. It'd be a gift.
I'm sure that we could help you get to that point, but that's the hardest. I'm sure as you've learned, that's the hardest part about racing is trying to figure out where you're going to get the sponsorship to come from, because you got to buy a lot of tires and gas and everything else that in between that it takes to get there. And it's cubic dollars equals cubic speed.
Yeah. The truck's about $100 per mile is about what we've come out to be. So yes.
$100 a mile. Well, I guess that's okay. So this Volkswagen flip, and I watched this flip and I'm thinking to myself, my God, that looks like it hurt. Were you buckled in like you appropriately should be? Did you have your helmet and everything on? Do you have a Hans device? Tell me about flipping this bug.
So the answer to that is no, because I thought I was just in a bug, but that was like the most violent crash I've ever been in. But now I promised Lindsay I'll never get in a race car again without all the proper stuff. So I haven't been in since. So, yes, I have a Hans, have a helmet, have all the proper stuff, but no, I didn't have my Hans and I had a motocross helmet on. I didn't even have it buckled. So I blew my helmet off in the crash. It was all bad.
Your helmet blew off inside the car?
Yeah, I held it against. I tucked my chin and held my like a cradle, a little baby is holding on to it it bounced. First hit, it just flew off.
So did it take you a while to get out of the car? Did you have to go to the infield care center? Or did you just tough it out?
I just toughed out. I mean, I was laying on the side for a while, and the guys came over like, "Oh, you already have your helmet on?" I'm like, "Yeah, yeah." I took it off right away. It was uncomfortable.
Oh my God. That does not surprise me one bit, but, Jesus, I don't even know what to say after that, but it's very entertaining. It's very entertaining to watch, your path through the racing piece of it, because I know how intense you are, and I know how much you just like to keep pushing things. And the racing thing, when you start pushing things, winds up costing you money. And I think that there's probably some good life lessons that are taught in there that say, okay, well, I could shove this in there, but I know how much that right front fender costs. I know how much the tire costs. I know how much the suspension costs. So I say that, and then I see you roll into the races with three different classes. So
yeah,
do you think about how much the parts and pieces cost when you shove it in there, or are you just like, screw it, I'm going in there, I'll figure out how much it costs later?
Yeah, like I'm right now, I have my buggy's totaled, the truck is pretty wrecked, and the bug's okay. So the cheapest one made it through pretty good this weekend, but the other two is going to take a hit. So we'll see.
So who's working on them?
Well, the truck is down in California, because I know nothing about trucks, so I have an actual whole team of guys that run that. But the Can-Am's here, and the bug's here.
So you guys work on them in your shop, and you're over there working on them.
Not today, I'm not, but I will. Yeah.
Yeah. So you've got yourself in the middle of another. We'll get away from the racing thing, because it sounds like you've fully got that under control. You've got yourself in the middle of another. intense situation here with Dana White's bull. Tell me how this happened. How do you get yourself into riding the baddest bull? Did you ride bulls? Had you had too many Budweisers when you committed to this? How did this happen?
Well, yeah, I rode bulls back in high school. So, well, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, God, when was high school? Yeah. 2000, I graduated. So, 14 years ago, I used to ride bulls. I haven't even thought about or considered it since. I put the kids camp on every single year. So I'm doing the ride to raise money for kids camp. It's kind of how it all unfolded. And I thought, why not give Dana, at the time I didn't realize it was the baddest bull. Only three people have actually covered his bull. And, I kind of got my foot in my mouth, but now I got to just go do it. Hold on and let her have. So we'll see. I've been practicing a lot. The practice bowls, which I'm getting on now, are nothing compared to the actual bowl I'm going to go ride. I just trying to practice, do what I can. I'm actually going to Dallas tomorrow to head over to JB Mooney's and get on some bowls. So we'll see.
So is this like when you used to fight, Dana has a big say in how much you practice so that he knows that you're going to not go out there and kill yourself to make sure that you're doing what you're supposed to do? Did you guys have to come to some sort of agreement on how much you would practice, or is he just like, all right, you idiot, you're going to ride this bull and you can prepare if you want, and either way, the show's going to happen?
Yeah, that's how it went. But he's like, oh wow, he's actually taking it serious and going to ride it. But I like legitimately want to go ride it. I don't want to just go get on it 1 second later and get bucked up. I want to go put the boots to some bitch and give it. So we'll see.
Well, as usual, I guess more power to you, because you're a braver man. You're a braver man than most. But as we talk about Dana White, he's been a big part of your life throughout your whole fighting career and the things that you have done. Talk us through how Dana has helped you through your fighting career. I mean, we've been with you. Just for those that don't know, Donald was our first client at Kevin Harvick Management. We Tap Out brought Donald to Texas Motor Speedway, and we became friends and went to watch him fight. And that's really was the birth of Kevin Harvick Management when Donald came to us and said, hey, will you manage me? And from that point, we've helped him through everything that he's done. But being a part of that on the KHI side, we've learned that Dana White is very involved with the fighters and everything that you guys do. So how was he, tell us how he was instrumental and some of the, your best Dana White stories from things that you had to work through in order to get a fight, or something that happened that everybody will think is something that would be fun to know.
Well, just, I mean, for one, being a professional athlete, there are a lot of rules that which you can't do. Like, you can't go horseback riding. You can't go skiing. You can't, there's a lot of things that they don't allow you to do once you sign a contract committed to a fight that you could possibly go get injured. But, He never made those apply to me. He'd always be like, come on, kid, just don't. I know you're going to do it. Don't get hurt. So I never had the rules what I could and couldn't do. He never told me yes or no. He never told me don't take that fight. He's always very supportive. Like, this is what you want to do. We'll get you as many fights as you want. And just later in my career, he started like pulling me back. Like, man, let's slow down a little bit. Let's think about retirement. I got this racing organization I just bought. Let's kind of shift you over to that. So he's kind of segued my life, helped me with the raving and, man, just financially through my whole career and even now today. So it's, the guy does a lot for me. A lot of people talk crap about him and tell him, oh, he just doesn't pay the fighters enough. And my answer to them is, you got to go create yourself a name. Like be like Sugar Shane O'Malley is right now. You want to make money, become that guy and you make the money. You become the Cowboy Cerrone, you make that money. Other than that, they're not just going to pay you to not move the needle and make the money. So I think I made him money through the career, so he always helped me out.
What if I told you this spring you could eat really good food without any stress, mess, or hassle? Well, that's exactly what you will experience with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Each meal is chef-crafted, fresh, and dietitian-approved. More importantly, they are never frozen and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. The choices are plenty. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular ones like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast on the go, lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. Listen to some of these premium ingredients Factor has. Filet mignon, truffle butter, and shrimp restaurant quality food that you do not have to prep, cook, or clean up, delivered right to your doorstep. And if you need to change your deliveries, you can pause or reschedule whenever you like. Factor is your solution for fast premium meals. Also, for the month of April, Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for our lowest carbon footprint meals. So what are you waiting for? Head to factormeals.com/Harvick50 and use promo code Harvick50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code Harvick50 at factormeals.com/Harvick50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off the following one. Fuel up fast, eat better, and get back to what you love doing this spring with Factor.
What was one of the times that Dana was like, hey man, you probably don't need to be fighting, or a fight that you were injured during camp? And because for us, we were always in the dark as the management company. We never knew with you where you stood, because what did you always tell us?
Neither did he.
Yeah. There's a difference between my favorite cowboy saying is there's a difference between being hurt and injured. So what the hell does that mean? So please explain to me what that means now that you're done fighting.
Well, if you're injured, you can't fight. If you're just hurt, you can figure it out. And I always tell everyone, that pain in my knee or that pain in my shoulder or that pain in my rib, it's a long way away from my heart. So I would always just fight through it and figure out a way to get it done.
What was the one where you shouldn't have fought?
Connor.
Connor. Were you hurt?
Yeah. Hurt and just mentally wasn't ready for that. I just was done, didn't want to be there. And yeah, so that one probably shouldn't have happened. Probably there's a couple of them along the way that I probably shouldn't have never done, and some I took and ended up winning and was like, oh, see, we're fine. And I probably never should have went in there with the injury that I had. But it's fighting, it's how we get paid, and hell, I had things to buy.
That's right. Yeah, and I think we all kind of live by that motto with whatever we do, and you do what you do until there's just that ultimate moment where it sticks out and says, hey, we can't do it anymore. I think as you mentioned that Connor fight, I was there that night, and your walkouts were always pretty amazing and intense, and the crowd was always into him. What's that feeling like when you walk out of that tunnel and you're walking out in the crowd? Are you just completely pumped up, or you think that you're going to die? What's that feeling like walking out to that ring?
For one, it's the coolest feeling in the whole world. It's got to be what like a musician feels like when he's rocking a concert, you know, and the place goes absolutely bananas when they call your name, you walk out, and yeah, you're scared to death, but you're faking it till you make it. You're letting everyone think you got this, you're cool, no problem. So you fake it till you make it, till you get out there and the first couple punches. Once they ring the bell, it's go time. But there's also been times I'm like, yeah, let's go, ring that bell. Like, I couldn't wait to get into the cage. Sometimes I just was like, man, it's the longest walk in history to that cage because you don't want to be there. So it's such a weird dynamic. Some days you're 100% in, you'll fight anybody. And some days you're like, man, why am I doing this? So trying to find the days that you're 100%, it are far and firm between. So you always prepare to beat someone on your worst, you know, and that was the secret success for me, was trying to figure out how I could perform the best at my worst and go out there and just get it done.
So you have kids now. You have that dad in you and I think that changes things. And when you were fighting at the end of your career, you know, to see those moments with you and those things that happened with your wife and kids and everything towards the end of the year were made me pretty proud to know you, knowing how much they mean to you. But I think for me, one of the coolest moments that everybody planned that you didn't know about was when they announced your induction into the Hall of Fame, and yeah. and everybody came out that night. What was that feeling like when you saw them? And I think I know your answer, but I want to hear what you have to say.
Yeah. Well, the weird thing is that everyone playing secret and keeping them away from me. Like, Ozzy called me like, hey, let's go get lunch right over here. And I was like, all right, let's go. You want to go have lunch and drink beer right before we go to a fight? Shit, I'm down, you know, but it was weird because they were sneaking them in. And then, I had my buddy there, Uncle Laser, crazy little comedian guy. And we were sitting there, and right when it came on, I was like, oh, this is happening. And then I look over and see the wife and kids, like, oh, unreal. This is cool. You guys got me. You got me. So you got me.
Yeah. So are we fighting or racing? Which are we just going to do both? Because a lot of times when you're racing, you're fighting anyway. So, you think that they're, what does Danger seem to be interested? I know he's the oldest.
They racing. They love racing. Love, really? Love it. Yeah. They love it. He has two race cars right now. So he goes out and drives every single day. The first thing he does, when he gets home from school, like, can we go drive the Can-Ams? Like, sure you can. Let's go.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people don't give the kids enough credit for the things that they can actually do. And when they're exposed to, you know, just being able to go out there and figure stuff out, heck, when they're 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, they're learning at a pretty rapid pace. So you thinking that you're going to put him in like off-road vehicles, or are you looking
at off-road? He likes off-road. So he won last year when he was 4 years old, he won the Mitt 400. It's pretty cool. He was racing against 8, 12-year-olds. So he was 4 years old and went out there, and the parents, of course, afterwards, you had to hear all the dads. Oh, that is that car fair? Is that thing? And I said, listen, I play by the rules. My cars are all fair, but you need to be worried about my 4-year-old just drug your 12-year-old. So that's what you need to be over there. Don't be bitching to me. Be bitching to him.
Oh man. It sounds like off-road racing is exactly like the rest of racing.
Oh yeah. I mean, everyone wants to cheat until they get caught cheating, and then they want to point the finger at you. But I play by the rules every time. They can, like my truck right now, they just pulled the whole motor apart because they thought we were, have an illegal motor. Like, go ahead. It cost you $10,000 and you got to put a motor back together. I don't care. Rip it apart. It's on you. I don't cheat. I play by the rules. So just like fighting, I never cheated ever. I always made weight. I never took any drugs. I always played by the rules. So I never was ever worried about anything. Same thing off road. I'm going to race as hard as I can legally. And, people know me out there. So they don't want to bump me, push me, cause there's no law. I'll whip your ass and leave you for dead in the middle of the desert. So it'll be all right.
Have you had any tussles at the off-road races yet? Or does nobody know? Everybody knows they don't need to mess with you. Baja 1000.
I did. Yeah. I was driving another guy's car, and he would pull out and he would hit us. It's called nerfing when you need to, like, someone doesn't move out of the way, so you make a move. Well, he had a class one buggy, which is a 1,000 horsepower buggy. We were in a Can-Am, so way faster than us. He pulled out and he slammed into the back of our car. I let him by. Then he pulled over about a mile up the road, did it again. Pulled over a mile up the road, did it again. So we were probably 10 miles from the finish line. When we got to the finish line, I unbuckled my seatbelt, ran back to his car because we finished before him. And I said, hey, man, you got a problem? Like, is there something going on? Like, I don't understand. He's like, oh, no. Our power steering pump was out. Our fuel pump kept shutting off. We had to keep pulling over. Had nothing. So I was like, all right. So that was the closest I ever been to whipping someone's ass out of the desert. But so.
You crack me up, man. I love every minute of talking to you. I think it's racing is one of the most intense things, and people who haven't been in racing just have no idea the intensity that comes with driving a vehicle, building a vehicle, going with your friends, and competing for in your race for 1,000 miles, and to know how you carry those emotions through. Is something that you can't explain unless you have somebody else that's done it. As you go through these last several months and with everything, you've got the racing bug. You're off doing all the racing stuff that you do right now. Do you ever have the itch to walk back down out towards that octagon and fight again, or is it just you're doing what you want to do at this particular point and just having fun?
I had a company. Well, the bare knuckle guys offered me a fight, and I said, you'd have to come up with such a number that would entice me to just get off the couch. I did, and I'm making money through all the stuff doing with Dana right now and all the sponsors I have that stuck around with me. So I'm not dying for money. This truck is costing a lot, so I might have to just go take a fight just to just to keep the truck alive. No, I don't have any interest, though. Next month, going and filming two movies, one in Atlanta, Georgia, and the other one in Idaho. So hopefully the movie star thing takes off and I'll start working like The Rock and start making $20 million in movies. Then I'll just buy a brand new race car. Every single weekend I'll have a new car. So that's what I'll do with all my money.
How in the world did the movie thing start? What was the first movie you did?
Stunts. I started doing stunts and it just kind of took off from there. You know, I had a good on camera presence, I guess. And I was never scared to, I don't know, throw a fake punch or take a fake hit or roll a car or jump off a bridge. So, stunts took off and then they figured out I could say a couple lines and then die. So I did a bunch of movies where I'd say a couple lines and then get beat up or I'd die. And then the several lines took to more and more and more. And now I've slowly gravitated away from stunts and more into the acting side of it.
So the acting side of it, did you have to go take like acting lessons, or do you just go out there and be yourself? You just take direction well?
Yeah, not only direction well, but the cool thing is a lot of roles I play are kind of like tough guy, macho roles. So I just already live that. I embody it. So I don't have to pretend to be that guy. All I got to do is do the lines.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you are one brave soul, but I think when you look at the fighting, the acting, and the racing, is there anything that you would go back and change as you went along the way that you would have said, this moment I should have done like that, and it would have led to something different? Because I always tell people, look, I made a lot of mistakes, I screwed a lot of things up, but I'd never be here where I'm sitting today if I hadn't screwed all that up. So is that, do you...
You wouldn't change nothing. That's what I mean. No. It'd be hard to back up if you change this. If you change something along your career, you wouldn't be living in Ricky Bobby's mansion. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll recreate the scene of in the living room of the Ricky Bobby movie once if we ever get the thing done. We'll invite Will Ferrell over to see if we can figure it all out. But
perfect.
The impact that you had on UFC fighting, the impact that you've had on everybody's lives, the fans. I mean, I look at your Instagram, you've got over like 4.5 million followers on Instagram. The things that you did for the fans and the impact that you had on fans just skyrocketed the last 5 years of your career. And it was a pretty amazing ride that you had. And I think Do you understand the magnitude of everything that you did, or has it ever been a show? Because I always tell people with some of my stuff, it's like, hey, I'm here to put on a show. I have to do the things that I have to do. And when I'm sucking, I got to be more dynamic than everybody else. Was there a lot of thought that went into it, or were you just you?
Just me. Yeah. No thought at all. I never cared much about the fans. I mean, I just went out there and lived my life and never held back on what I'd say or what values I thought were right. And yeah, just me being me.
I love it. And you know what, that's what we always appreciated about everything that you did. And like I said in the beginning, you are the reason that we started the management company and we became friends and watched you become the dad that you are. And I think that is the most impressive thing to me, to see how you started and from where we met to where you are today. And proud to call you a friend, man. And I appreciate you taking the time coming on with us today. And I'm going to let you get back to work.
All right. Yeah, my dog's not having it. You guys are taking me away from her, huh?
Thanks for taking the time, man.
I appreciate, of course, man. I appreciate all the years of support, and man, it's been a fun ride.
All right, make sure you buckle your helmet.
Always, no more, never again, never again.
No more half-ass helmet buckles.
Now, just get Josh. Show me the money, baby.
I love it. Have a good day. Thanks, man.
Yes, sir.
I want to thank Donald Cerrone for coming on the show today, and thank you guys for listening to Kevin Harvick's Happy Hour presented by NASCAR on Fox. You can follow us anywhere on social media at Harvick Happy Pod, or give us a follow on YouTube, and we'll see you next Tuesday. Thanks for listening.